Turning our attention to baseball now and the Milwaukee Brewers, talking about the Brewers and Major League Baseball today with our two guests back with us once again, Paul Noonan and Ryan Topp, hosts of the podcast. It's titled Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast. Always fun to listen to them. And as we talk with them today, I hope you'll join in. What are your predictions for the rest of the Brewers season? Let us know maybe your favorite moment from the Brewers season so far, or maybe you've tried a pocket pancake. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or email to talk@wpr.org. Paul and Ryan, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yesterday, the Brewers took on the Cubs, and, you know, I was concerned because they'd lost and kind of on Brewer-like fashion to the game before that. But then it was like, all right, we're starting a new round of wins here.
Yeah. The loss was a little unusual just in that they didn't blow the doors off a team. But honestly, they'd had a bit of a run against the Reds in that last series of scraping some lucky ones out. And you know, if you're going to win 14 in a row, you're going to have some luck. You're going to be good, but you're going to get lucky too. No team goes on a streak like this without getting fortunate. And in that game, I think fortune finally came to an end for them. It's going to happen. But, you know, overall, they're just a great team. And so it's not that surprising to see them roll into Chicago and dominate again, because they do that with routine. We should be expecting that of the Brewers at this point. That is the standard they've set.
You know, I saw the story by Ken Rosenthal. You guys probably saw it too, or maybe you didn't. He wrote that that offensive regression before the postseason is inevitable for the Brewers. Ryan, what do you make of that?
I mean, to a certain extent, sure. The Brewers currently do lead baseball in runs per game right now. They're scoring 5.2 runs per game, which is better than even the vaunted LA Dodgers and their $300+ million payroll that they've got. The Brewers are doing that in a lot of different ways. They're not doing it with the kind of power you generally expect, but they are getting on base. And so that's kind of, if you've seen the movie or read the book Moneyball, you know that on base was this wonderfully underrated stat that smart teams sort of figured out that was what they were going to do. And the Brewers excel at getting on base. They're currently second in baseball in terms of on base percentage behind only the Toronto Blue Jays. And so even though they don't hit for a ton of power, they do get on base, and they are, as Pat Murphy likes to call them, the Woodpeckers. They're an extremely annoying team to face, and a big part of that is they make fantastic swing decisions. That's sort of one of the big things in baseball analytics these days is swing decisions. When should you swing? When shouldn't you swing? Optimizing that is really, really important, and the Brewers might be the best in baseball at that. They have a bunch of guys who make really good swing decisions. They don't swing at pitches outside of the strike zone very much, and when they get balls in the strike zone, they tend to kind of go with them and hit them where they need to, and that's led to that. You could look at it a bunch of different ways. The Brewers are basically an average team with nobody on base, but when there's runners in scoring position, they're the second best team in baseball in terms of hitting. They're a tremendous two strike hitting team. They kind of do all these sorts of things very well, and so Ken's probably right that there's a little bit of regression due, but I wouldn't think that it's going to all fall apart and they're just going to completely stop scoring. There's just too many good bats in the lineup for that to probably happen.
Well, and it's amazing that we had a couple of people out for a long period of time, including one of our stars.
Yep.
He was out the entire time that, and I suddenly blanked on his name.
Jackson Chourio.
He was out for that whole stretch of 14 wins in a row.
Yeah, he was. They are... they're an especially deep team. And just to go back to Moneyball a little bit, I think one of the reasons that Ken might be more wrong than, well, he's a good analyst, but one of the things that's hard to spot in sports is when there has been a new development versus just getting lucky. And when I do sports analysis, I spend most of my time looking for regression to the mean statistics. Guys, we're going to crash back to earth. The Brewers don't have that many of them. And I think a lot of this is because they've been buying and drafting and a specific type of player, which is a player who is going to be amenable to their swing decision coaching and who's good at making contact. And outside of a few guys, almost every Brewers starter is in the top 10% in baseball in speed. So what you end up having is all these guys who can get the bat on the ball, which is not a skill that most teams have. And when they do, they're always going to be putting pressure on the defense to make a really good play to throw them out. Any ground ball to shortstop for the Brewers is like five times as likely to be a single as it is on any other team. And all the rest of baseball is focused so much on getting home run hitters. And you're always going to trade some speed and some agility for a big guy who can hit home runs. And like 85% of the rest of the league just has these guys playing at a bigger, musclier capacity in shortstop in places where they didn't tend to play. And the Brewers are capitalizing on that. They've shifted where the rest of the league hasn't. It's been great.
I've just been watching how many times have Brewers hitters legged out a base hit on, you know, sort of even on a miss hit where it's just a, you know, a, sort of a grounder, the infield hit. They got to be close to leading the league in infield hits.
Yeah, they're up there, and you could just see it in yesterday's game. Yep. The third run that they scored was essentially exactly that. They had the ball was poorly hit and put in play, and I can't remember exactly who the batter was who did it, but it was poorly put in play down the first base line, and they were able to get down the line quick enough that the Cubs were not able to complete the play, and then the ball ends up squirting away from the defender down the line. Yep. And the Brewers are able to then score as a result of that, and you've got that sort of thing going on too. But we shouldn't completely overlook the fact that they've also been getting more power. This lineup has been hitting for more power. Their own guys, Bryce Durang, has hit 7 home runs this month after having 6 in the all the time leading up to this month. Sal Frelick is having a breakout power season. But the biggest thing here, and I know Paul wants to talk more about this, is Andrew Vaughn's breakout. When they started from the White Sox, he has been a revelation and is truly batting like an MVP. And Paul, you wanted to go into that.
Go with Andrew Vaughn. I mean, what a story. Talk about him.
So Andrew Vaughn, I think, is another – people are waiting for him to come back down to earth across the baseball analytics sphere too. And I'm not sure that's going to happen. One of the smartest things you can do in any sports organization is grab guys with really good pedigrees from really poor organizations and teams. And the Chicago White Sox – are that they set a record last year. They don't really know what they're doing. There's been a ton of articles on their front office and how they're just very backwards. Andrew Vaughn was a 3rd overall pick in the Major League Baseball draft. People thought very, very highly of Andrew Vaughn at one point in time. And I just think the White Sox really didn't know how to develop him properly. And that there were a couple of little tweaks that could go a long way. One of the things that Andrew Vaughn did do well, even when he was on the White Sox, was crush balls that were in the strike zone. Very simple thing, right? You want to be good at that. The problem was Andrew Vaughn was swinging at too many things outside of the strike zone. And as Ryan mentioned earlier, one of the things the Brewers are the best, very, very good at coaching is swing decisions. So before he joined the Brewers, Andrew Vaughn was swinging at 36% of pitches outside the zone, and his career average is around 33%. Since joining Milwaukee, that's down to 26%. That is a huge drop. And so if you just don't swing at those, first of all, they're balls, not strikes, so you get up in the count. And then when things are in the zone, he makes contact with the ball 89% of the time. It's usually hard contact. So it's not as easy as just telling a guy, you know, don't swing at bad pitches. The thing the Brewers, I think, are really good at is identifying sort of tells and little ticks out of the pitcher's hand on just don't bother swinging at. If it's an inside breaking ball, don't swing at that. It might be a strike, but live to fight another day on something you can handle a little better. And so I don't think he's going to crash back down to earth because he is clearly making better decisions with what he decides to swing at, that's the change. And so as long as he keeps doing that, he's going to hit like an all-star. So they basically just made an all-star out of nothing. Well, Aaron Civale is not nothing, but and a pitcher they didn't want turned into an all-star first baseman.
It's absolutely amazing to me how these – we get people from all over the place, it seems like, who weren't doing anything at all and are performing way underperforming compared to what they're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Isaac Collins would be a perfect example of that, too. He's probably the favorite for Rookie of the Year in the National League right now. He is a 27-year-old. Well, I think he may have just turned 28.
I think he is, yeah.
And he just is coming off paternity leave, so now he's got that dad strength because he just had his first child. But he is having an out-of-nowhere season. He's got an 833 OPS, which is 35% better than the league average, for those that don't know that. So he's been one of the best hitters on the team and has been really, really good. And where did the Brewers get him from? Well, they got him from the sad sack Colorado Rockies. And so once again, they went to a bad team and said, hey, here's a guy that we think we can make better because they're probably not getting the coaching that they would benefit from most. And here's Isaac Collins having a breakout. Now, do we expect that to necessarily last long term? No, it's probably, this is probably Isaac Collins' best run of his career. But if you do this often enough, which the Brewers excel at doing this so much, then you could sort of stack these guys up and kind of keep it rolling. And the Brewers always seem to have guys like this, right? Like they always seem to have kind of a guy like this on the roster who's giving more than what you would expect. And so that's not an accident. That's not luck. It's sort of dependent on doing a lot of things right, and which they.
And the coaches. I want to talk about the coaches too, but just to we need to take a little short break here. So let me remind you, we're talking today with Ryan Topp and Paul Noonan. They are the host of the podcast. It's called Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast. Give a listen. It's fun to listen to. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about insects with entomologist Phil Pelletieri. Then we'll cover how you can get involved keeping count of wildlife in our state. And we'll also hear from the new director of the UW Arboretum. That's tomorrow. Today, we're talking about the Brewers with Ryan Topp and Paul Noonan, a host of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast. Question, you can email us to talk@WPR.org or give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Love to hear your opinion of the Brewers and how they are doing. Let's go to the coaches. I mean, we have got, I hope they're, you know, they hold back sometimes on what they're paying the players. We keep pretty, what are they, the eighth lowest in the baseball, I think. But I think we're doing better on the coaching side, and I hope we keep that up because we've got some really good coaches. Talk about the coaches for a minute.
Well,
Paul, go ahead.
I can start. Pat Murphy is a big change from Craig Counsell. In Counsell was definitely an implementer of front office strategy more than anything else. Former player gets along with players. Murphy definitely does some of that because you can't work for the Brewers without having some front office in your ear, but is definitely a philosophical change and one that has worked with this team quite well. First of all, just on being kind of a player's coach goofball, like with pancakes and whatnot. And you know, a guy you can rally around. Counsell's not that. He's a little bit dour. And coaching goes in cycles like this. You know, it's good to have a taskmaster and a serious guy. It's good to have a player's coach. It's kind of good to back and forth on this. But he really does seem to get the most effort out of everybody, if nothing else. And there's a lot to be said for a guy who's good for clubhouse chemistry, for getting everybody on the same page. And so the only bad thing Ryan and I have really ever had to say about Pat Murphy is I think he does use his relief pitchers maybe a little more than he should. He likes to tinker. He likes to get guys in there when maybe not leaving well enough alone. But by and large, the Brewers run a really good strategic team. And you know what? They run such an old school offense right now with singles and speed and stolen bases that maybe having a little bit of an old school manager isn't the worst thing in the world. Pat Murphy's kind of used to calling this kind of game and probably likes calling this kind of game. And it's kind of boring for a manager just to tell guys to go up there, take walks, and hit home runs. So I think it's really been a good coming together of old strategy, new strategy, and a manager who just gets the most out of everything.
Yeah. What about the rest of the group?
Yeah. So Ryan? I think the first guy we should really talk about is Chris Hook, who has been the longtime pitching coach. And he's a fantastic, fantastic pitching coach. But I don't want to single him out so much because this is a whole organizational philosophy from the bottom to the top. The Brewers are known for their pitching lab. Their pitching lab is superb. And so all the way down from the bottom of the organization to the top, they have, and they have a bunch of other pitching coaches too. Their assistant pitching coach is Jim Henderson. They have a bullpen coach. The Brewers have a ton of coaches. It's one of the things that's really happened in baseball lately is teams, the coaching staffs have exploded and teams have just tons of different people on their coaching staffs. Now, the Brewers used to have a run prevention coordinator. I think they still do, though. The guy that they had now is with the White Sox, Walker McKinven, but he'll be a manager soon, by the way. Walker McKinven is a name to keep an eye on for that. But they're just so good at bringing pitchers through and developing up from within. And that's a huge credit to Hook, who I think is kind of the CEO of that whole operation, but everybody else underneath as well, in terms of getting the most out of arms. And it goes all the way to the front office too, because they have to identify players that they can work with. Quinn Priester is a perfect example of this. Quinn Priester is having a breakout year for the Brewers after they traded for him at the very beginning of the season when things looked really bad for the Brewers. That everybody was hurt. They had a huge month about pitching injuries. And they brought in Quinn Priester, and everybody kind of said, we have a guy on our podcast who is a pitching coach, and he said, I don't see it with Priester. I don't see what the Brewers are seeing. And then all of a sudden, they have turned him into a much better pitcher. They've made tweaks to his arsenal. They have made him a better pitcher. And so that goes to credit not just Chris Hook, but like the entire staff was involved in making that kind of improvement. And it's, again, this is something they're just so good at and are kind of the envy of the game, I think, for most teams.
I think you're right. And I was trying to think of some of the other pitchers' names that suddenly escaping me. But I mean, I can remember interviews with some of them. Who is the elderly pitcher that we got this year? Good grief.
Jose Quintana.
Quintana was talking about what they talked to him about when he got there, and they said, you know, and telling him what to zero in on. And he said it made a huge difference, Ryan. It did make a
huge absolutely. Absolutely. It made a huge difference. And even a guy, a veteran who knows what he's doing, like Quintana, will still take things from the Brewers organization and be able to learn. But also the Brewers learn from him. They're very good at this. They did this with Wade Miley as well and countless other pitchers. They bring in these veteran pitchers because they love the influence that they can have on some of their younger pitchers in helping kind of be extra coaches. And people have cited Quintana as that. Freddie Peralta, who's been with the Brewers since he was, you know, just a kid himself, he has turned into sort of an elder statesman that way. I mentioned Wade Miley in the past, who has a future as a pitching coach. All of these types of guys, they're all part of this stew of smarts that the Brewers bring to the table.
And Peralta is now, I think, leading the league in wins. I think he's got 15 wins now. He certainly looked good yesterday. I had a little hiccup in one inning with the bases loaded and one out, I think.
Yeah, but that's really good to see from Peralta, too, and I think a testament to how much he has improved and become that veteran statesman on the Brewers. One of Freddie's problems in the past has been that he sometimes lets himself get blown up when things don't quite go his way, or he starts to nibble too much and be too careful. And I actually viewed yesterday's game as kind of a test case for him because, you know, this is, they have a huge lead in the division right now. It's not the most pressure-filled Cubs series you could ever have, But, you know, you want to avoid a disaster in that. The Cubs lineup, for as big a lead as we have, the Cubs are still very good. They're debatably still the second best team in the National League. And it's a hard lineup to get through. And he was just masterful yesterday at giving them a start that they really did need after the bullpen was taxed in a few extra inning games in a row. So Freddie has definitely taken to, like, feedback, pitching lab influence, like everyone else has. He has improved every season over the past few seasons and become really a true frontline starter for this team.
I didn't want to, we've still got some time left, but I wanted to be sure to bring up the fact that the Brewers are ranked as having the best farm system in the game, I think, by Baseball America. So not only is the present looking very bright, but the future looks pretty bright as well. How did that happen, and who should we be looking forward to down the road for the Brewers?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I was at the game last Wednesday with my folks, and our co-host, James, sent a message to the group saying, yeah, Baseball America just ranked us the number one farm system in baseball. They kind of laughing at me because I probably got more excited about that than just about anything. I do our minor league podcast as well. Yeah, the Brewers farm system is just continues to turn out talent, and MLB is set up to keep this from happening. Big part of what MLB does is they give you the worst records. The teams with the worst records get the high draft picks, and the high draft picks are especially important in baseball because those tend to be the superstar players. You can create good players later, but the very best players, it's usually pretty apparent, and those guys go early. So it's real hard for a team to be able to be consistently good and then picking at the bottom of the draft and sustain a top-level farm system. And a big part of why the Brewers have done that is they've been exceptional on the international market lately. Jackson Chourio is obviously a young budding star for them right now. Freddie Peralta goes back, and he was actually a trade acquisition. But if you look at some of these young guys that are coming up, there's two names in particular really to know, their top two prospects, and that's Jesus Mate and Luis Peña, who are both shortstops, though they'll probably end up moving around a little bit. We'll see who could kind of stick at short. But these are two of the best hitting 18-year-olds in the game right now. They dominated in the Dominican Summer League last year and have come up and are the youngest players. They were so good in Carolina, where they were the youngest players in the Carolina League, that they got promoted up a level to Wisconsin, to the Timber Rattlers. And I'm actually going to get to go see them this Friday. I'm looking forward to that very much. And Jesus Mate is a special talent, really, really a special talent. The bat or the ball just jumps off his bat in a way that you don't see very often. So Jesus Mate is another player to get excited about for the Brewers for the future, in the vein of, he honestly was ahead of where Jackson Chourio was at some of the same points.
Another email wondering about catcher Danny Jensen. I think we got from the Tampa Bay Rays last month. And this is an Appleton emailer. He's from Appleton. What do you think of him? What of his performance so far? He caught yesterday, I think.
Danny Jensen is a good player. He is. So Eric Haas was the incumbent backup catcher, a decent enough player, but it's good to have a solid veteran backstop behind William Contreras, just so you don't sacrifice huge amounts of offense when you have to give him a day off. One of the problems the Brewers have had is that, frankly, William Contreras loves playing. He does not like taking days off. And so it hasn't been a huge problem. Like, literally, he and Willy Adames last year basically insisted on playing every day. It's not good for him. And he's had actually a broken finger for most of the year. It's easier to make the case that he needs to take a break if you actually have a competent major leaguer behind him. No offense to Eric Haas, who did a fine job while he was here, but there's a long trail on Eric Haas stats, and he's just barely a major league hitter. Danny Jensen is not. Danny Jensen is a pretty decent backup catcher, formerly a very, very good framer. One of the things the Brewers are very good at, in addition to pitching development, is training their catchers and retraining them to trick umpires into turning balls into strikes for them, called framing. it is a stat. It's something that doesn't always age particularly well. It's something that Jansen used to excel at and has fallen off a bit. I suspect they think they can get him back up to above average in that. And so he's been good, and it's just nice to have a good, solid depth catcher that they didn't really have before.
And it's nice to have you guys join in once in a while and talk about the Brewers. Thanks so much, Ryan Topp and Paul Noonan. They host the title of the podcast is Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast, and you can easily find it when you go online. Well, hopefully they'll come back and be with us again. And thank you for joining us today, full day. And, of course, thanks to Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud, our technical directors Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robin, our executive producer Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.